again, and welcome to Musings on Golf, where we will never go obsolete, as far as you can tell. My name is Kelly Elbin, along with Bob Bupka. Bob, we had a birdie fest, an eagle fest, an everything fest at TPC River Highlands over the weekend. Keegan Bradley finishing at 23 under, and then Rory McIlroy proclaiming that the golf course at only 6,800 yards is, in his opinion, obsolete based on the current technology. I don't know that I disagree with him necessarily based on all the 60s and 61s and 62s.
Yeah, I mean, it's just such a popular spot, and they do such a great job that they kind of overlook the golf course a little bit. But I found fascinating about what transpired this past weekend at the Travelers. 4 years ago, Ches Reavy, in a battle with Keegan Bradley, down the wire, Ches Reavy comes out on top. 4 years later, this past weekend, it's Keegan Bradley, Ches Reavy, in a battle down the wire. Keegan Bradley comes out on top. And the one thing about Keegan, he's always referred to this as his fifth major. He's a New England boy, a big Red Sox fan, and there could not have been a more popular victory on the PGA Tour than Keegan Bradley winning the Travelers Championship.
I agree with you. And his second win on tour this year, and let's hear what he had to say afterward, winning in front of a very partisan crowd.
It was a stressful finish, but, you know, once I got that ball on the green on 17, I kind of could take a little bit of a deep breath. But, you know, I did a great job of just, you know, trying to stay calm and ended up winning the tournament. It was just so fun to have a three-shot lead where I could enjoy it and mess up a little bit and still win. I could let my guard down a little bit. And, you know, I've never been able to do that in my six wins. So I'm so thankful for the fans, and I'm so honored to be their winner.
Yeah, it's really genuine, isn't it, Bob? I mean, it truly means a lot to Keegan Bradley to win the Travelers.
Well, just look at what they put in his bank account. How about $3.6 million for Keegan Bradley? And how about a little added pressure maybe on Zach Johnson? Ryder Cup coming up. He's proved he can do it under extreme pressure, playing in front of his hometown folks. Nobody wears the red, white, and blue any better than Keegan Bradley. I'm not saying he's going to be on the team, but I guarantee you Zach Johnson going to take a little peek.
Well, I'm saying he should have every reason to give it a very strong look, because all I can remember with Keegan Bradley, having worked at the PGA of America for a long time, were the 2022 Ryder Cup matches at Medina Country Club outside Chicago. He went 3-0 paired with Phil, and the two of them together, over those first three matches, they took the afternoon off and the Saturday session, but they were just an incredibly dynamic twosome. And you want that, Bob. You want that guy who is passionate about playing for his country, who maybe has that little bit of an edge to him. And also Keegan's maybe a little bit older than some of the younger guys. I think all of that experience, that passion to represent your country, man, if that doesn't merit a strong look, I'm not sure what does from Zach Johnson's perspective.
Well, Kelly, I don't think there's any doubt he's going to get a strong look. It's just whether he's going to get picked or not. Right now, I would probably say I'd vote in favor of him getting picked. There are a couple of more events coming up, and Zach Johnson will keep his eye on Keegan Bradley and then make the right decision for the good old red, white, and blue.
Well, I'll tell you who represented the good old red, white, and blue incredibly well throughout her career was Julie Inkster. And she's our guest today. And as I was thinking about this, Bob, and, you know, we all have the information to look it up and so forth, I'm not sure Julie's record, her accomplishments have maybe been as hyped, if you will, as some others in the women's game. But she won 31 times on the LPGA Tour. That's sixth all time. It's more than tied with Nancy Lopez and more than Pat Bradley, Keegan's aunt, by the way. Captain of the Solheim Cup three times. She won at least two major championships over three decades. She is, she's going to be recognized by Jack next year at the Memorial Tournament. We're going to hear that. Julie Inkster has just had a phenomenal career for someone who, as we'll find out, really didn't get into golf seriously until she was, into her teen years.
Yeah, and I'm very proud to say that Despite all the accomplishments of Julie Inkster on the golf course, she is a nicer person off the golf course and a wonderful ambassador for the sport, and she certainly has some longevity in her. You'll hear that her mother, 86 years old, still very active, and we certainly appreciated the opportunity to spend some time with Julie, and I think our listeners are going to really enjoy it.
I do too, and you're going to hear our interview with Julie Inkster right after this from our friends at Titleist.
The all-new Pro V1 and Pro V1X are designed to outperform. Created in Titleist R&D laboratories, manufactured in Titleist golf ball plants, and then validated by the best players in the world. These golf balls are longer and more consistent with unrivaled control. Outperform with the new Titleist Pro V1 and Pro V1X.
Welcome back to Musings on Golf. Bob, we are thrilled to be joined by the great Julie Inkster, whose World Golf Hall of Fame credentials include 31 LPGA Tour victories. She holds the record for most wins by an American in Solheim Cup history, and she is the only golfer in LPGA history to win two major championships in three consecutive decades. Julie Inkster, thanks so much for joining us, and welcome to Musings on Golf.
Well, thank you both for having me. This is quite a treat.
All right, Kelly, I'm going to put you to the test right to start with.
Yes, sir.
Tell me the significance of June 24th, 1960.
Something tells me that Julie Inkster will be better able to answer that than I. But Julie?
Well, no, she won't.
June 24th, 1960. Well, that was just a little bit before I was actually born, so I don't know.
Well, it's the day I graduated from high school, but it's also the day that Julie Inkster was born, so that our listeners get some idea of the age disparity here.
it was a good week, I think.
I think so, Julie. And I have to start with you getting that phone call from Jack Nicklaus. I have a very keen sense of how you must have felt, and let me tell you why. Because for my birthday last year, Julie, I opened the mail, and there's a letter from Jack and Barbara Nicklaus wishing me a happy birthday. So I was over the moon on that. You get a call from Jack to tell you that you're going to be recognized at the 2024 Memorial Tournament. That had to almost floor you.
Yes, it's super special. You know, it's funny how things come to you later in life. You know, you work, you know, you're always trying to find out where you are on the money list, you know, where you are as, you know, player of the year, or where you are as how many Solheim Cup points you need to make the team. And, you know, then you kind of slow down and, you know, I get asked to be the Solheim Cup captain 3 years in a row. I get the Bobby Jones Award. And now Mr. Nicklaus calls me and tells me I'm going to be their honoree for 2024. So it's really special. Things like this that come along your way, you kind of feel like maybe you did some things right. Not only playing the game, but, you know, trying to grow the game and how you play the game.
Did that call kind of come out of the blue? Did you have any idea that Jack was going to be calling you and you were possibly on that short list?
Well, I'm actually on Jack's captain's club. So it's a club that it's all members of all tours. It's the RNA, it's CBS, it's the Augusta, and then it's some players. And it's we have like a meeting, a roundtable meeting to discuss where the game's at, you know, what can we do as leaders in the game to help promote golf for all for all individuals. And so, we honored, last year we honored Larry Nelson, and what a great man he is. Just what a great story. Coming from Vietnam and it's fabulous, a gentleman. So I guess I was on the short list, but I still really didn't think, I'm super young, and so I think they would maybe do someone
else.
Yes,
you are, Jillie Inster. You are, in fact.
But when Jack told me, he actually told me face to face that I was the honoree next year. That's pretty cool.
It doesn't get much better than that. And I got to believe you. Very pleased at what's going on right now with women's golf. The women's PGA Championship just held at Baldur's Roll. The women's Open is coming to Pebble Beach. I mean, these venues and the LPGA, they're meant to be.
Oh, I agree with you. I mean, these are iconic venues. These are venues that the men have played for many, many years. Pebble's kind of in my backyard. I'm only an hour and 15 minutes away from there. So I grew up playing in the California State Am there. And super disappointed I never got to try to play an Open there. But I'm really looking forward to going down there next week and seeing how the ladies play it. I think there's not one player that's not pumped to go play Pebble Beach. I mean, a lot of these ladies have never seen there, never been there. And it's just so majestic, just the views and how the course can change from the first hole to the eighth hole. I do hope to get a little fog and rolling in, rolling out. I just think it's a great test of golf because it's not super long, but it just has some just great holes. And anybody from back east or Japan or Korea, they can turn it on, and everybody knows Pebble Beach, the 18th hole, the 7th hole, the 8th hole. They're just holes that are just majestic, and I'm really looking forward to going down there and watching.
We are delighted to be joined by World Golf Hall of Fame member Jillie Inster here on Musings on Golf. Hey, Jillie, before we came on, you mentioned about your mom, God love her, still living in the same house all these many years that you moved to when you were 3. Could you talk a little bit about that and growing up in a family, a very active family with your brothers, playing a lot of sports? And how did golf get in the mix for you at a young age?
Well, it's funny. We used the golf course before golf courses got to be, special terrain territory that, you can't touch. But we used that golf course to play football. We lived right on the 14th hole. We had a bunch of kids in the neighborhood. So we'd play football. We'd play wiffle ball. We'd go look for golf balls. And then we'd put them in those big square egg cartons. And then we'd sell lemonade and we'd sell golf balls and lemonade to make enough money to go to the boardwalk so we can ride the rides.
Jillie, this is Pasatiempo Golf Club, right?
Yeah. Golf course. Yeah.
A golf course, on
the 14th hole. Yeah. Right. And so, my dad was a fireman and my mom was a stay-at-home mom, and I had 2 older brothers, and at 15, we were kind of required to get a job for the summer to make some money for our own spending. And my oldest brother worked at a liquor store stocking the shelves and the coolers. And my brother ahead of me, he got a job mowing greens and weeding and just working on the golf course. And so I had a friend that played golf. I was a sophomore in high school, and he played golf, and he was always on when we played football and wiffle ball. He was always playing, and we were talking. I said, I need to get a job. He goes, why don't you go up to Pasatiempo and see if you can get a job up there? And so I go, okay. So I rode my bike up there and I got the job. And so I was picking up the range and parking carts. And, you know, I was definitely a jock. I played a lot of sports. But I was playing sports my brothers played. And, you know, I just said, you know, I think I could play this game. And so I made a set from the Lost and Found, and the pros there kind of helped me, you know, get started. And that is how I started golf.
That was your first set? A Lost and Found in the golf shop or in the back room?
In the back room, yeah. Just, yeah. They're a mixed max. Oh, I mean, back then it was stiff shaft, regular shaft. It wasn't like it was, you know, graphite and, you know, 360 degrees or, you know, basically I tried to get a set from pitching wedge up to three iron and, you know, and it kind of mixed. I didn't have my first set of matching clubs until I was, just 17, maybe just turned 17.
Wow.
So, yeah, but I mean, it worked. I mean, I fell in love with the game because it was a game that I could never conquer. I mean, yeah. And all the guys that played at the course, the boys on the high school team, they were really, really great. They were some of my best friends. And so I just played with them. And then it happened that a coach from our high school team called my parents and said, hey, I hear Julie's playing golf. Would she like to go out for the boys team? Because, you know, they didn't have a girls team. Yeah. And so I made the JV team my sophomore year and then varsity my junior and senior year. So that's kind of how I got into golf. I kind of fell into it. It wasn't like, you know, I wasn't a junior prodigy or, I mean, I didn't. The only junior tournaments I played in were like the one day where you got a hot dog and a Coke. I mean, that was kind of, you know,
yeah. Right.
Yeah. I mean, I didn't play out of California until I qualified for the U.S. Open when I was 18.
Wow.
Did growing up, did the game, it's a hard game, we know, but did getting better at the game come relatively easy to you? Did you improve, you know, as you advanced in age?
You know what? I didn't improve quickly. You know, I shot in the 90s, you know, low hundreds, 90s. But then I made a big jump where I was going, you know, 90s to low 80s. And, you know, playing past tempo, shoot, if you shoot even par, that's like 63, 64 anywhere else. It's a tough golf course. And, you know, in the summertime, it's foggy. It plays long. You know, I didn't know any different. I was super spoiled to be able to go out and play past tempo every day. And, you know, they were great about letting the players, the cart people play. We could play in the afternoon anytime we wanted. And so I would work in the mornings and then play in the afternoons. I improved quickly. I mean, good enough to qualify for the Open. So
well, and you also won three women's amateurs. First woman to do that in 50 years from when you won from 80 to 82. Hey, I'm wondering, what was that like going from one to the other? Were the expectations greater as you went from one to the next to the next? Was there more pressure? Because that was a huge deal. It had to be a huge deal to win those three in a row. Did you know there was history in the making?
You know, I didn't, you know, I wasn't very, well, adverse to golf history. You know, we didn't watch golf on TV. I mean, I don't know if they had golf on TV then. I don't know, but you know, I didn't even really know what the LPGA was. When I qualified in 78, you know, I love match play because it's just mano a mano. I mean, it's just, yeah. I don't know. I just like the vibe. It's just you and me going out there and competing. And, you know, to win 18 matches in a row on three different golf courses, you know, six each time, is super hard to do. But and because golf courses change and maybe it doesn't fit your eye or whatever, you know, I never really qualified low. Like I was never low qualifier or probably even the top 10 qualifier, but I always qualified enough, like in the middle of the pack, above middle of the pack. And then match play is just kind of getting on a roll. You know, it's momentum. It's, you know, there's a lot of matches I probably should have lost, but I'm super competitive and I always kind of found another gear. So, looking back on it, you know, I've been very successful professional wise, but looking back on it, winning three U.S. amateurs in a row is probably my best achievement.
Well, that's quite an achievement. And let me ask you this, Julie, and Julie Inkster is our special guest here on Musings on Golf. What do you remember about your very first LPGA event?
Well, it was in North Carolina. It was called the Henry Don Classic. And so I failed the qualifying school my first time. And then I got it my second time. And they only took 10 players back there. And, it was just if you had one bad round, you were gone. I remember I was actually playing fairly well. I think I finished 13th, but I was playing, I think on Saturday with a lady named Dot Germain, and she was actually winning the tournament, and super nice lady, a lot older than I was. I was 23. And I thought she was older than dirt, but she was probably like 32, 33. She's winning the golf tournament and she looks at me and she goes, "Look at those roses over there. Aren't they just beautiful?" And I'm like, "You do realize you're winning the golf." I didn't say that to her, but I was saying it to myself. It's like, I mean, I didn't see anything. And she's seeing the roses and it just kind of surprised me that, how non-focused she was, but how great at golf she could play doing that. I think I ended up finishing 13th in my first tournament. No Roseanne, but pretty good.
Pretty darn good. Yeah. Julie, you won seven majors. Does one stand out above the others?
Well, I think, you know, winning your national championship is always something that's on any professional golfer's bucket list, or amateur golfer or junior golfer. And it took me a really long time to do it. I started 18 was my first U.S. Open, and I won my first U.S. Open when I was 39. So wow. I was very, very, very persistent. I kept after it. I already had two kids, and I lost in a playoff to Patty Sheehan in 92. But then in 99, it was just kind of a monkey off my back. And now I could say that, you know, I'm a national champion.
Wow. 21 years. That's just an amazing story.
Yeah, I feel like if I was a baseball player, they would have sent me down to AAA. Because 0 for 21, that's not going to do it.
Oh, the great Julie Inkster joining us. Hey, you mentioned about having a couple of kids. What was that like raising children with your husband and competing at the highest level of women's golf all those years?
Well, I was married 10 years before I had Haley, and it was pretty successful. I had a pretty good career up to that. And then if you kind of look at my record, from 90 to 95, I think I won once. So not so successful. In fact, a couple times I was thinking about hanging it up. But, you know, when I first got pregnant, when I first had Haley, you know, we didn't have maternity. We did not have daycare. I played 6 weeks after having Haley, you know, and luckily my parents and Brian's mom came out with me. I really had to figure it out how to be, because my mom was a stay-at-home mom and great mom, and you know, I'm traveling around with these with Haley, and you know, she's sleeping in closets and drawers and bathrooms, and you know, week to week we're in different places, and I just thought I was going to raise a psycho kid. but you know what? It turned out great. I figured out that they don't care where they're at as long as they're with you. And they went to a Catholic school, and they were super good about letting them come out, bringing their work. And, you know, now they're 33 and 29, and we got them both married. And I loved it. I love my son-in-laws, and it all worked out. But it was touch and go there for a while, believe me.
Oh, I can only imagine. Hey, you mentioned earlier about match play and the mano a mano. I've always been kind of fascinated by the mental side of the game. Did you always, but did you often feel like you had sort of that mental edge for whatever reason in a match play environment? Talk a little bit about the importance, if you would, in general, about the mental approach, particularly at the level where you played.
Yeah, I mean, I can't say I was ever the best at anything. I mean, you know, driver or putter or, you know, iron player. I mean, I was good, but I was never great at all. But I always felt like I was the best grinder. I never gave up. And in match play, that's kind of the attitude you have to have, is you got to grind it out. And I think playing a grinder in match play is super distracting to the other players, because you know, they'll be on the green and all of a sudden you come over the garbage can and the snack shack and hit it to about 12 feet and make it for par, and you tie them and they're shaking right. Their head going to the next hole. So I think that was kind of always my I kind of had an inner fire for match play. I guess I didn't ever want to look at that person in the eye and know that they beat me. You know, I don't know. It's kind of weird. I just from the first tee on, I was going to find some way to get the ball in the hole. And that was kind of my philosophy. And I think playing match play, you can't be afraid to lose. You know, it's because it is mano a mano, and you're not going to win every match. And I was winning these things saying, okay, I'm going to give it my all. She beats me, she beats me. But she's going to have to work super hard to beat me.
I think that's a pretty good philosophy to play with. Well, we just about finished our round with the great Julie Yingster, Musings on Golf. One final question from me, Julie. Are you playing a lot of golf today? Do you still play a bunch at Paso de Tiempo?
Yeah, I'm one of those weird ones where I love to play. It doesn't really matter who I play with. I'll play with anybody as long as they're fun. And they like to banter a little bit. I am actually playing this coming week in the LPGA Seniors in Jasper, Indiana. And I'll play in the USGA Seniors. But that's pretty much it. I do a lot of corporate stuff, which I love to do. But I still practice. I still love the game. You know, I have my little Inkster scholarship, with Workday to help me. So I stay in touch with the younger players to help them go from college golf to professional golf. And so I keep busy, which I think keeps you young.
Could you give us an indication of what you think about the state of girls golf today?
No, it's booming. I mean, it's growing. I mean, these kids these days, you know, they start. The only thing I worries me, they start so young that. You know, I love people to love the game, to play the game because they love the game, not because they're good at it. And I think a lot of these younger girls are getting burned out early because they are playing so much. You know, we played all sports in high school. And now, you know, everybody's got to be selective. You know, they can't play basketball and baseball. They have to do one or the other. And I think that's also why a lot of these kids get hurt earlier in their career. But, you know, I think it's such a great game. It teaches you a lot of life lessons and a lot of humility, too, because it's one tough game.
Hey, Julie, you know, I know how important the Solheim Cup has been to you and to the LPGA and the women's game. I'm wondering, in playing in Solheim Cup matches, and in, you mentioned about being the captain three times, how did that compare to playing in the LPGA major championships? Was it at a very different level, or was there some similarities?
Different level. I don't think I've ever been as nervous than I have when I play in Solheim Cups. And it's so weird. I mean, it's like, you know, why? There's no money on the line. You know, most of the Europeans all play on the LPGA Tour. And when I have to look at them for a year and a half, you know, with that smirk on their face, it bugs me. It's so much fun, and but it's so nerve-wracking. I love being a part of a team, you know, growing up playing team sports. It's not really about the golf. It's the dinners and the camaraderie that you have in the locker room. It's really getting to know your fellow peers. And then the competition's great. Anytime you can put on that red, white, and blue, and I know it's not really changing the world or anything, but I take it too super serious whenever I put on red, white, and blue, because I know I'm representing my country and we want to do it the right way. So I loved every aspect of it, but it's completely different than when you're trying to personally win something. And it's so much more rewarding when you do it as a team.
And final question for me, what were the big differences for you being a player in Solheim Cup versus being the captain?
Well, I thought it was a lot easier to be the captain. I didn't have to hit a shot. You know, my thing was to make sure the girls were comfortable, having a great time, outside of the golf. I wanted them to have lasting memories of being on a Solheim Cup team. And I tried to put them where I think they could succeed. It wasn't really a me team. It was a very collective a group of people, including the girls that were I was playing that were on my team. I asked them for a lot of advice. You know, I wanted them to take ownership of the team also. So they felt like, you know, it wasn't me just dictating, you know, I really enjoyed their thoughts and I put them to use and, it worked well 2 out of 3. So, I think that's pretty good.
Well, Julie, it's been a privilege and an honor to have you on Musings on Golf. We thank you for your time and look forward to seeing you down the road.
Well, thank you for having me. Enjoyed talking to you both, and we'll definitely see you down the road.
When you make the best performing golf balls in the world, your biggest competition is yourself. And now the golf ball that sets the standard for every other has raised the bar again. New Titleist Pro V1 and Pro V1X are longer and more consistent with unrivaled control. Outperform with new Pro V1 and Pro V1X. Titleist, the number one ball in golf.
Bob, one of the things that I overlooked before we went into that interview is she achieved the same as Tiger Woods. Just as he won 3 straight U.S. amateur championships, Julie won the U.S. women's amateur 3 straight times, as we found out. And great player.
Oh, absolutely incredible. You know, just such a vicious competitor with a heart of gold. I mean, that's a rare combination in sports. That's vicious competitor with a heart of gold.
Yeah, I agree with you completely. We want to thank Julie Inkster for joining us. And next week, as we head into the 4th of July, we're going to be joined by a gentleman who nobody really had heard of before the first round of the 2023 PGA Championship. But everybody knew after 4 days at Oak Hill Country Club, PGA Club professional Michael Block will be joining us on a special episode of Musings on Golf. Bob, looking forward to talking to Mr. Block, huh?
Oh, absolutely. What he did for club pros in that PGA Championship, outstanding. What he did for himself, even more outstanding. I am really looking forward to spending a little time with Michael Block.
For my good friend Bob Bupka, Kelly Elbin signing off. Musings on Golf. Looking forward to hearing from Michael Block next week.